So to get us started 2 weeks ago, we just kind of started working through some basic facts about the resurrection, what you would need to prove that someone rose from the dead. Do y'all remember that? I was working on that. You're just staring at me. I was hoping there'd be all these nods, like bobblehead nods. So for example, we said in order to have a resurrection, you have to have someone who actually lived. Which bumps up against this idea of Jesus being a myth. In fact, Jeff and I had a really interesting conversation last week about that topic because he was sort of scoffing at the notion that anyone would even say that anymore, because Jeff functions in a more academic field, and he was saying nobody in academia questions this anymore. I mean, the historical evidence is so overwhelming that there actually was a real Jesus that you know, there aren't scholars who are challenging that. And I shared with, oddly enough, last week, I also saw a video of someone mocking anti-abortion protesters saying Jesus is a myth. And so there is that gap between maybe what's being written about in academia and what's actually happening out there. So in order for there to be a resurrection, you have to have somebody who lived. And then secondly, he had to have died. And so we talked about some of that evidence, the abundant evidence for the death of Jesus. And then we added this piece, and we were in the middle of talking about this 2 weeks ago, the fact that Jesus was buried. Do y'all remember that? And we said there is an astonishing amount of information that we have about the death of Jesus, especially when you consider the fact that we know very little about the deaths of anybody from history. You want to think about that for a minute? Especially way back history. And with that in mind, let's just quickly walk through some of this again to set us up for class tonight. What are some of the things we know about the death of Jesus? Think about the details.
We know who took his body.
Who?
Joseph.
We know that Joseph of Arimathea took charge of his body. What else do we know about Joseph?
Put him in his tomb.
Put him in his tomb. What do we know about his tomb?
It was new.
It was new? What?
It was
never been used.
Sorry?
It says never been used yet.
Yeah, I know that's kind of weird to us because we're thinking obviously it's never been used. But it was common. They carve out these caves and more than one person, I shouldn't say that, more than one body would be placed in there. Yeah. There's actually something else we know about the tomb.
It was sealed.
Well, yeah, we do know that it was sealed, which the Roman seal was a pretty big deal. You didn't break that. Huge consequences.
They wrapped the body.
What's that?
They wrapped the body in cloth.
There's more detail about how the body was prepped for burial. Yes, I'm sorry.
I mean, it was owned by a rich man, so it wasn't a pauper's.
Right. Correct. Yes. He was a man of means. How about the entrance? How'd you go in and out? There was a stone that rolled in front of the door. Isn't that interesting? Could you think of anyone else from history that you know that much detail about their tomb, that we have that info? Especially, bear in mind that at the time, who was Jesus? At that time?
A dead guy.
Huh?
A dead guy.
A dead guy. Not helpful, but thank you.
From Nazareth.
He was a carpenter's son from a backwater Nazareth that thought he was a Messiah and the state put him to death. He was a criminal who had been executed. That's what he was at the moment he died, and you and I are sitting today and we're rehearsing the details of his tomb. Think about that. Anything else we know about his burial?
It was near Jerusalem.
Near Jerusalem, that is exactly right. We know the location. That's going to become very important as we push deeper through this. Anything else?
His tomb was guarded.
We know that his tomb was guarded. Why?
So that they wouldn't come steal his body.
Yes, the Jews were very concerned. Jews were aware, interestingly, they said it was going to rise. And they had the Romans guard it to ensure that that was going to happen. Maybe that had something to do with the fact that sometimes when Jesus was around, bodies that were meant to stay in the tomb didn't always stay there. They were going to make sure his body stayed there.
Pretty recent instance of that.
Yeah, it doesn't go back very far in the story, does it? The other thing I want you to remember, because I think it's important, everybody knows where he's buried. Let that run through your head. Who all knows where he is? Where the body is?
The apostles.
The apostles.
Obviously, the apostles know. The group knows because, did I hear someone say women? Did you say
women?
Yeah. The women were involved in helping with the burial. When the initial resurrection reports, Peter and John go running to it. In fact, who ran faster?
John
beat Peter. How do we know that? Isn't that interesting? There's a great YouTube video about that, by the way. So John and Peter talking about who won the race. It's really who else knows?
The high priest and all of his.
The Jews know where the tomb is. Yes. Who else?
The Romans.
The Romans know where the tomb is. One more. Who does it belong to?
Joseph
knows where the tomb is. So just remember, this becomes important, especially as you get into alternate theories. Everybody knows where Jesus is buried. Now, let me throw one other fact out that I think is interesting to add to this list. All of this stuff going on is public. First of all, do you agree with that? All this stuff going on is public.
You agree with the crucifixion on?
Well, obviously ministry was public, but I'm thinking about these events beginning with his arrest, right?
His arrest wasn't so public.
What's that?
His arrest and...
The rest was at night away from the crowds, but you did have all
some
the
witnesses.
Guard that was there, right? What else?
Well, it was public enough that they wanted to seal the tomb to make sure nobody broke the, or moved the rock.
Right. Thank you.
Have a lot of witnesses that can say what did or didn't happen.
Well, okay, that's the event, the benefit of the events being public. Thank you.
You're not going to mistake it for the wrong one, right? Everybody knows exactly where it's at. So there's no question there. Right?
Yes. I want you to think about when I say all these events were public, can you think of some examples of these right at the end activities that involve the crowds?
That's Pilate right. Washing his hands.
What's that?
Washing a pan, Pilate's hand.
Okay, at least some of these hearings. Before the Roman officials were public in the sense that there was a crowd there. And I don't know who all was in that crowd. I just know it was a crowd who saw Pilate's gesture. I'm kind of washing my hands with all of this and saw how that went
choosing
down.
Barabbas.
Sorry?
Choosing Barabbas over Jesus.
That was part of that too. That's exactly right. Okay. Okay, you're not going to be able to sit behind Lawrence and expect me to call on you.
I think he said, she said what I was
going to
say.
I'm sorry.
You should never trust
Stephen. But I didn't hear her.
You think of anything else?
The crucifixion was public.
The crucifixion was public. Think about that. How do we know that?
Because it was right by a road.
Sorry?
People were passing by.
Yes. A crowd came out to see those who were condemned die. And so there were witnesses, friends and foes, who were there watching him die on the cross, right?
Or leaving.
Or,
a lot of his friends were leaving.
Not all of them hung out.
Right.
And that's important to remember. That actually is an element of the story. Do we know anything during these hours about what the disciples are feeling and thinking?
Abandoned.
Abandoned? Thank you.
They're afraid.
Of?
the same.
How do we know they're afraid? Yes, yes, I think that's right. How do we know that?
Well, the Bible, Peter says it for everybody.
Peter says it for everybody?
Well, fled when he was taken into custody.
Yeah, there is the statement about them all fleeing. Where does it say they are when the resurrection report comes?
In a room, locked away.
Yeah, hiding out. The text says they're hiding out for fear of the Jews, and I think that's exactly right. I think they're worried they're next. If they're killing members of the movement, we need to hide out. We might be next. So, by the way, remember the embarrassing details we talked about? Not a flattering thing to include in the record, that we were afraid and hiding out. Yeah.
We should give John a little bit of credit. John was actually there at the crucifixion because Jesus tells him to take care of his mother. So he was there. I don't know how long he was there, but he was there for some period of time.
Some of them hung around, didn't they? In fact, John, we know, is at the cross. We know Peter is at least in the court during some of the phases of the trial, right? Because what happens there?
He denies Jesus.
And there's that moment he denies him, and then Jesus and Peter lock eyes. And that is one of the most horrific moments in the whole crucifixion story for me. Think about what that was like for Peter. You think that carried it with him his whole life? I mean, you look back on your life and you got some regrets and you have some moments that are stuck because you think, wow, I look terrible at that moment. That's Peter's moment. That's got to be in there. Yes, sir.
Luke records the testimony of the men from Emmaus.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And they knew everything that was going on. Yeah, when they're talking to Jesus, they're like, don't you know what's been going on in Jerusalem all this time? And so, yes, thank you. That's another example of how we know the events are public. One of the reasons I say that, any of you guys know who Oral Roberts is? Some? Everyone over the age of 50, anyone? Knows who Oral Roberts is?
That was not necessary.
just true. Okay?
They're a college after him.
I tried to use an illustration from the movie The Dead Poets Society Wednesday night in class, and every kid in the class looked at me and said, thank you. Well, you got two kids in that class. They didn't know what it was.
I don't know what it is.
Well, that explains your sons. So, anyway, I've got to start trying to figure out if my cultural illustrations are even relevant anymore. But, did y'all know that Oral Roberts raised someone from the dead?
That's why he's got a university named after him.
Oral Roberts raised someone from the dead.
No, I did not know that.
I never wondered why they have a great big hospital there if he could do that.
Always kind of bothered me as well. But
he couldn't do it for himself.
Why don't we celebrate that? That's exactly the problem. This allegedly happened in some private spot where two or three people saw it, and then they came out and declared, he's raised someone from the dead. And I have the same reaction I think you guys are having. It's like, no, don't believe that. Jill said, not real, didn't happen. So what I'm trying to get you to see is that that is not what happened in Jesus' case. It's not like there was this incident that happened over here in a private spot where they say, he rose from the dead, and they come declare it to everybody. This was a public thing. Everybody knew about this, as the guys on Emmaus indicate, right? The road to Emmaus. Everybody was talking about it. These events were public. And then the last thing I want to put up, and these are just kind of these foundation facts we're working, is that something happened. And something happened the next Sunday morning. Not everyone agrees on what happened, right? But everyone agrees something happened. Who all agrees with that, by the way, in the story? Who all agrees something happened?
The writers.
Peter and John.
Well, eventually.
The ones that
Jews,
were.
The Romans.
Okay, stop for a second. The guards agree that something happened. B, Because what's their story?
He's
gone. He's gone. The body is gone. The tomb is empty. That's the testimony of the Romans. Which, by the way, that's a problem for the guards. Why? Yeah, they're going to lose their lives over this. In fact, that's why they leave and they go to the Jews. What's the Jews' testimony about this?
The earthquake.
They came and stole the body.
Don't tell anybody.
They came and stole the body. This is Matthew 25, or 28 rather, verse 11. The Jews come up with the story that the body of Jesus was stolen by his disciples, which is so helpful to us. Why? You ever thought about that?
Because they admit that the body was gone.
They're admitting that the tomb of Jesus was empty. Something happened. There was a problem with Sunday morning. What did the disciples say?
Two of the disciples went in the tomb and didn't see him.
Didn't see him. What did they eventually claim?
He's alive.
What?
He's alive.
He's alive. He rose. And we witnessed that. Right? And it became the centerpiece of New Testament preaching. So everything is hanging on what? What happened? Everyone agrees something happened. Everyone on scene agrees that something happened. What happened? Now, if you look at Acts 2, what the claim of the apostles is, look at verse 22. This is Pentecost. Peter speaking. Men of Israel, listen to these words. Jesus the Nazareth, a man attested to you by God with miracles and wonders and signs which God performed through him in your midst, just as you yourselves know. This man was delivered over by the predetermined plan and foreknowledge of God. You nailed to a cross by the hands of godless men and put him to death. But God raised him up again, putting an end to the agony of death, since it was impossible for him to be held in its power. And then after going back and citing prophecy as proof, he says in verse 32, this Jesus God raised up again, to which we are all witnesses. And then 36, therefore let all the house of Israel know for certain that God has made him both Lord and Christ, this Jesus whom you crucified. And so front and center, after explaining the miracle, the message of the gospel starting in Acts 2 is, you killed him. God raised him.
And we witnessed it.
We saw it. Yeah. Right? That is exactly right. That's their preaching. By the way, if that's true, everything is true. Okay? Everything rides on that. That's that 1 Corinthians 15 passage we talked about 2 weeks ago. It validates all of his claims. Everything in Christianity hinges. By the way, if you got kids in high school class, that's what I told them. Everything is hinging on this historical event and whether or not it occurred. Question: how do we know that it actually happened?
There is who saw it.
Yeah, there is no video evidence. There are no witnesses to talk to. I will tell you guys, I know with absolute certainty that there was a hurricane that hit Galveston in 1900 that killed thousands of people. I know for a fact that's true. You know how I know it? I have sat at the feet of a living witness. My great-grandmother, who lived with us for a while, lived through that storm. And I sat in her room in our house and I listened to her tell the story of the 1900 storm. I know that's true. I've talked to a witness. We don't have any living witnesses. We don't have any video evidence. No, I heard someone say pictures. Who said pictures? There are no pictures of Jesus dead on the cross and rising from the dead. So is there any way possible that we can know that it's true?
People who were alive then saw some pretty wondrous things happen the night of his crucifixion. The earthquake, the darkness, the temple veil being torn into, the dead being raised from the graves. The ones who lived, who saw those things, they would talk about it.
I frame it this way on purpose because this is exactly how end of believers are going to frame it to you. How can I possibly believe in this thing when we can't know it's true?
Yes, sir.
Speaking of that, I'm thinking of the one who's the most prominent one we probably could think of, and that would be Paul, who obviously didn't believe it to be true initially, but came to that.
Right.
What he knew, what he may or may not have seen, I don't know, but whatever he heard wasn't enough to convince him. Of course, he had other prejudices going on, but,
right.
But then he's the one who says, he appeared to Peter first, then to the 12, and not only that, to 500 at once, many of whom are still, most of whom are still alive.
Yep.
Including me, last of all.
I think it's interesting, I think we forget sometimes, that most of what we believe historically, we believe without the benefit of witnesses. Will you think about that for a minute? Most of what we believe historically, we believe simply based on evidence that it's true. Evidence like artifacts or documents. Think about that. I mean, guys, you go back 150 years. There was no video. When did pictures even come around?
150 years ago.
Yeah, ish, right? So anything before 200 years ago, there were no living witnesses. Nobody saw George Washington's inauguration. There are no pictures of that. Y'all believe he was the first president? Or are you kind of unsure about that? Not really confident that can be so because, you know, I just can't talk to a witness, right? Everything we believe from history is based on documents that has testimony from people we think are reliable. And we could fill the board with all the things you and I believe. So it is an odd thing to me that people get all hung up about this. It's we believe the resurrection for the same reason we believe anything that comes down to us in history. Yes.
Like to go into that, I think those people just don't want to believe because if you have a question, you go to Google and Google gives you an answer and you say, okay, that's the answer. You don't start going down the rabbit hole and researching, was this person really telling the truth? It's literally you ask Google, Google told you. And so I think those people know, they just don't really want to believe because if I believe in that, then I have to do something. I have to act, and that is the problem that they don't want to.
That's an important point. Thank you for saying that. I do think that there are people who do not want to believe, and it doesn't have anything to do with the evidence, right? And I'm not really sure there's a lot that we can do to help those people. By the way, was that a problem in Jesus' day? I still marvel at the guys in John 12 who, after Lazarus is raised, their attitude is, oh, we need to kill Jesus and Lazarus too. Because I'm thinking, I would not mess with a guy that's raising dead people. That would scare me. But evidently, they were not scared about that at all. So I'd like to do this exercise with you tonight and ask you to share with me. Obviously, it's Sunday afternoon, and you guys are sitting in a Bible class. And I'm guessing that you all believe the resurrection is true. I'd like for you to share with me why you believe it's true. What's your evidence? Yes, ma'am.
I believe it's true because it's written in a book that has proved itself over and over again and continues to prove itself over and over again throughout archaeology, history, science, and it's also written in a book whose literary quality is so far above any other book that's ever been written or will be written. And when you read it with an open heart, you know it's God-breathed. You know it's true. You just know.
Thank you for saying that. What I did to prep for this part of the class, I just started writing down stuff that impressed me. And the first thing I wrote down was records. And I don't just mean the Bible. The Bible is actually one record that we have. Do we have others?
Historical.
Yeah, we have other historical documents from non-Christian writers who talk about the same stuff. And the documents tell the story, just like things we believe from history. We read documents that have come down to us. And so we have in our New Testament four independent accounts of the resurrection, of the history of that event, as we have noticed, quite detailed accounts of what went down. In addition to that, we have non-Christian, anti-Christian sources that confirm several of the critical facts in the resurrection story. So, records are helpful. Whose hand did I see? Yes, sir.
Well, because our resurrection is based upon the resurrection of Christ, Romans 8:11. If he's not raised, then we won't be either.
So, there are tremendous consequences that follow if it's not true, right? It isn't just that part of the story is wrong. It's everything falls apart. And I want to be clear about that. If you've got kids in the high school class, I want you to know. I think that registered with them Wednesday, right? Because that's what we told them. None of this is true if the resurrection isn't true. And so any hope we have for the future is lost. So it's critical that the kids across the hall grow up with a solid biblical foundation, believing that these things are true. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I missed you back there. I knew I saw another hand back there. Yeah.
We talked about it a couple weeks ago about the different historical records through the historians, you know, Tacitus, Josephus, Irenaeus, Pliny the Younger. But on top of that, it's also some written in the Talmud, you know, the Jewish Talmud, that Jesus, well, they didn't call him Jesus, Yeshua, was a magician and practiced sorcery, and that he led Israel astray, and he was rightfully condemned to death.
Yeah, so I referenced Josephus. He would have been in the same kind of position writing as a Jew. Jesus is not going to be a good guy to him, and yet in the writings of Josephus, we have records. He even references, some believe, the resurrection in his writing. So here is a biased source in the wrong way, right? He's not interested in helping Christianity, and yet he testifies, at least let me put it this way, he testifies that the claim was made, right? Which is important. It means the story is out there, and people are talking about the fact that this is what he claimed to be. It's not a uniquely Christian thing to talk about that. Yes, sir.
Our convictions have to begin at the very beginning of creation. It all starts there.
Okay.
So as we follow that story of creation and we follow it all the way through the records we have, we come to the conclusion that there has to be a God, there has to be one that has created the story, his story, that flows all the way through Scripture, all the way through Revelation. So the story becomes accurate as we see the power that God has, not only in creation, but in the creation of his story.
Jeff would be so pleased that you took that all the way back to Genesis. I'm delighted at that.
Well, and along with that, I mean, there's archaeological evidence to support things throughout the story that are continually being discovered. You know, there's, oh, there were no Hittites. Well, yeah, there, you know.
There was no, King Nebuchadnezzar didn't exist, and then right. 10 years later, whatever, they find the...
Right, so...
Something saying something about King Nebuchadnezzar.
So now you're thinking, we're thinking here especially about confirming the Bible story more generally
right.
as being accurate. Mm-hmm. And that really ties with this, too. Gotcha.
Not just more generally, just the details, how minute we get in details, just with the resurrection story. I mean, the fact, when Mary goes in the tomb, there's two angels sitting on either end of where the body was, which, oh, by the way, if you go back to Exodus 25, that represents the Ark of the Covenant, and which is the throne of God, and shows God's power over death, and just all that minute detail that was in there. And it's not just a overarching general story. It's all the details that go, that are part of that, that are intertwined, going back to what Alan said, back to the beginning.
Yeah, in a book that is ordinarily concise, I think it's useful any time you encounter a section of scripture that is detailed in that way. You need to stop and ponder, why is this here? Why am I being told all of this? And it's as though, especially in John's gospel, have you noticed that John gets about halfway through and we're already at the end. And then the closer he gets to the end, the more and more and more he narrows and narrows and narrows, and it's just detail upon detail upon detail upon detail. You know, why is that? Why such meticulous records of this part of the story? And I would contend that at least one thing that it's saying to us is that this part of the story is critical. And we have these very meticulous evidence. The evidence is lined up for us there. Yes, sir.
You see, we have the same detail in prophecy. And so the other thing that adds on to that is that John wrote these things for a reason, the detail, I believe. And that is, at the very end of his book, he says that you may believe.
Yeah, that is clearly John's objective. He tells us at the end that what he's given to us is designed to help us believe that these things are so. Yes, sir.
I think the endurance of the story for 2,000 years, despite a massive opposition to shut it down, and the fact that it has spread not through force, but through education and teaching and faith.
All the way down through time, the story continues to be told. Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if this is what you're getting at, but for me, knowing what Jesus' death brought and what his resurrection brought for us, that's one of the reasons I believe. Because I know that had that not happened, I would have been stoned by now or struck down, or some consequence of a sin would have been already happened for me. I wouldn't have had that ability to repent and get to God through him without this.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I want you to think about, in connection with the record, that the record reflects the testimony of witnesses, right? So I can't go interview a witness, right? But I can consult documents that contain the testimony of witnesses. And I know that I can trust that what they're saying is true. I know these are reliable witnesses. How do we know that? What's the evidence that the guys who made the records are reliable witnesses?
They died for it.
Which is a pretty good lie detector, right? They were willing to go. Well, people go to the death for bad reasons all the time, right? What's the difference here? Well, that's another element of it, yes. They made these records, they tell this story, and what was their prize?
Death. Beheading.
Yes.
Well, yeah, how about before that, what was their prize?
Ridicule.
Jail. Beatings. I mean, we hold up the New Testament disciples, and we think these guys are great. Much of the world at that time did not think they were great. Remember Paul at Mars Hill when he started talking about the resurrection? What did they do?
Scoffed.
It's like he went to a university campus, right, today. They laughed at him. Guy's crazy. No wealth, no power. They suffered, right? And then eventually died because they would not recant their testimony. Which, let me remind you, is testimony that does not reflect well on them. Remember the embarrassing details? Think about how we know all this stuff about, we talked about this earlier in class, about what they were doing during the days that intervened the death and resurrection of Jesus. The guys are hiding out in fear. Who are the first ones among the group to find out that Jesus is alive? The women. The women are the heroes of the story. And the women are saying, and? Why is that a big deal? Why is that a big deal? That the women are the heroes of the story.
Because at that time, a woman's witness was, she could not be a witness.
I was hoping some guy was going to speak up. Thank you, Troy. I appreciate you doing the hard, heavy lifting in class. But, okay. No self-respecting Jewish man of that time would have ever written this story where the women are the heroes. Never. Wouldn't have happened. Dude, if you're going to make up a lie, at least make yourself look good, just like your children do when they lie to you. Right? I'm sorry, did that just, was that culture shock for someone? So the more, by the way, the deeper we dig into the details of what we know about the witnesses, that case doesn't become less impressive. It becomes more impressive. And so we have, like we do with other historical events, we have extraordinarily trustworthy eyewitnesses who give us accounts that we can trust. Let me pose something else to you. What is the fact that all of this, we emphasized this a minute ago, that all of this was public, how does this help make the case for the resurrection more convincing? Ever thought about that? The fact that it was public.
Can't be discredited as easily.
Why?
Because they're witnesses.
You can't hide anything.
Can't tell somebody they didn't see what they saw.
Now, first of all, where was the gospel first preached? Which is important because, think about this. Why is it important that all this started in Jerusalem?
Besides, it was prophesied. It was, because that's where everything happened.
Well, the crowd was still there 49 days later when Peter says, "You're the ones who killed this guy. God raised him."
It's exactly right. It's like someone coming along and trying to rewrite the story of Harvey. How many of you are a witness? Oh, I can't raise my hand because I wasn't here. How many of you were a witness of Harvey? Right? Someone came along and started trying to change that story? I wouldn't have did. That was just a little bit of rain. What would you do? You might engage in an act of physical violence. Right? Let me tell you that story. So understand that this is happening in Jerusalem, surrounded by people who knew about all these events. And then they started saying things like, one time he appeared to 500 people alive. And Paul adds, some of them are still alive. Why is that important?
Go ask them.
I go talk to them about that. I go in and talk to my grandmother about the 1900 storm. They could go talk to the witnesses. So the fact that all this stuff happened publicly and all of this is starting in Jerusalem, if they're making stuff up, if they're embellishing the story, how does the gospel survive in Jerusalem? It doesn't. It can't. Everybody knows what happened. The road to Emmaus, right? The guys knew. The other thing that is interesting to me, in fact, evidence-wise, this is probably the most compelling thing to me, is the problem of the body. Because Jesus came to earth as a man, right? He came and lived in a human body, which means when he dies, you got a body. What's the problem of the body?
Decays.
Sorry?
Decays at death.
Yeah, not fast enough in this case. Why does the body present a problem for the deniers of the resurrection?
Because he got it.
Where did he go?
Because it wasn't there.
That is the problem. Where is the body?
Nobody says it wasn't there. And they said they probably stole it.
where is the body? I actually think Christianity would have been extraordinarily easy to disprove. Because on Pentecost, Peter gets up and says, remember we just read this in Acts 2, you killed him, God raised him, we saw it, we were witnesses, right? If you're a Jewish high priest and you want to stop that myth, how do you do it? Go get the body. Parade it through the streets of Jerusalem. Jesus is not alive. He's dead. Here is the body. Why didn't they do that? So I think there is compelling historical evidence that the body was not there. Otherwise, it seems to me that they would have easily produced it, stopped the mouth of the disciples. Christianity would have died on the streets of Jerusalem.
And
I don't know.
Found later.
What's that?
It wasn't like it was uncovered, you know, 2 years later or anything.
In fact, it's interesting that prior to the resurrection, we have a pretty detailed chain of custody. You ever thought about that? We know exactly what happened to the body of Jesus. What happened when it was removed from the cross?
Joseph
of Arimathea goes to Pilate and says, I want the body of Jesus. And when he confirms his death, the body is granted to Joseph. So Romans to Joseph, what happens next? And we know who. They prepare the body for his death, the wrapping in the linen and the spices, or at least they begin that process. Then what happens?
Stone is rolled.
Sorry?
The stone is sealed.
They put him in the tomb.
Yes.
The 1.5-ton rock is rolled in front of the door. And the Roman authorities seal the tomb. Which was a big deal, by the way. That's again like penalty of death if you're messing with the Roman seal. And one other thing.
Police guards.
Guards.
They put a Roman contingent, Roman guards, to guard the door. So isn't it interesting that the Holy Spirit actually supplies the complete chain of custody from off the cross to sealed in the tomb? Right? We know exactly what happened to the body of Jesus. And the morning comes, and the body is not there. And who all confirms that the body isn't there? You ever thought about that? The guard confirms that the body is missing. The women, Peter and John, confirm that the body is missing. The Jews confirm the body is missing. How do we know they know the body is missing? Ever thought about this?
Because they put up the story that
they come up with a cover story. Disciples sold the body. Everyone knows the body is missing. And so what are we going to have to do now if the body of Jesus is in the tomb? If we're working on this case for the resurrection, to deny it or to embrace it, what do you got to do regarding the body?
Show it.
Yeah, you got to account for the body in some way. Right? Someone's criticizing. Listen, it's a great question to pose to people who don't believe. Just to say, help me with something then. What do you think happened to the body of Jesus? And guess what you're probably going to get back?
The disciples stole.
You're generous. I think most people are going to say, what are you talking about? They've never thought about that. That's part of the problem. People haven't thought about the evidence. Well, you know, Jesus came in a body. And he died. The body came up missing. What do you think happened to it? And by the way, men have endless explanations for that. First story was the disciples stole it. Then it was they went and buried him. They threw him into a pit. And on and on and on it goes. And frankly, that's all interesting, but it's literally pulled from thin air. There is absolutely no historical testimony that any of that stuff happened. You got to account for the body. And that is a problem. It's one of the compelling reasons for me that the resurrection is true. Because listen, If I'd been on the other side, I would have been totally saying, send someone for the body. Let's pull it out. Let's put this myth to it.
It's been a long time. I can't remember exactly what, but a woman I used to know, she would say, but it wasn't his body because nobody recognized him. I mean, the guys on the road to Emmaus didn't recognize him. And at first, the women didn't, you know, I mean.
I'm not sure I would agree with her premise. I think I'd have to spend some time with her on that, because I think it's probably overstating to say nobody recognized him. Do you think it's fair to say nobody was expecting to see him?
Yes, that's what my answer
was.
Yeah,
I think that some of that is just the shock of...
He's dead. Ooh, how could he be?
How, yeah, he's dead. How could he be here? That's exactly right. But I'm not sure that everybody didn't recognize who that he was. Really quick, let me add this to the end. And part of the reason for that, and I would add this to my list, is nobody was expecting this.
Nobody
was expecting that the Messiah was going to die. What did the Jews think the Messiah was going to do?
Set a kingdom up.
Yes. Where they already were jockeying for Secretary of State and Vice President. They were already lining up for jobs. This wasn't what was supposed to go down. No Jew at the time would have come up with a resurrection story. The idea the Messiah was going to die and rise. What was Peter's initial, the Peter who had just confessed him as the Christ, the Son of the living God, when Jesus put death and resurrection on the table, what was the reaction of Peter?
Can't be so.
That can never happen to you. And I don't think Peter was just kind of stirred in his heart and saying, oh, Jesus, you're such a nice guy. We like you. We don't want you to go away. I think Peter was saying, no, that is not how this story goes. It can't happen that way, right? And I don't think Peter is an outlier on that. I think that was everybody's disposition. They're creating, the idea that they're creating a post-myth story about a resurrection is just not a story a Jew from the time would have written. So it's just, again, the answers that critics provide are just pulled out of thin air. So I really want you to think about that before we get together next time, because I do want to look at some of the alternate theories that are proposed. I think we need to be ready to talk about those, talk to our kids about those. But if you think of other things that strike you as being especially convincing, I would be interested in hearing about that and building our evidence, because I think we talk to our culture. We need to be ready and equipped. It's the most important piece of evidence to be able to talk to folks about it. Anyone have an additional thought or question?
The hierarchy God made, who was still there, they would have put out such huge reward to bring it in.
It's interesting, nobody has cashed in on the myth yet, right? Thank you.